We are just about ready to get going with the interview section of the Duluth Rundown podcast, our interview with Eric Norgren. But first, a brief announcement from our sponsor for this episode, Austin Jaro Running. Austin Jaro is Duluth's original running store, conveniently located in the mall area in Duluth, right off Central Entrance. Pop up to Austin Jaro for running shoes, socks, gear, clothes, outerwear, food, knickknacks, whatever you need running related. Austin Jaro can help you out. Check them out up in the mall area again, right off Central Entrance. Thanks, Austin Jaro.
Okay, and we are joined now in the interview section of the Duluth Rundown podcast with our good friend Eric Norgren. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. I'm happy to be on this, and I'm going to have to go back and catch up on some of the old episodes because a failing of mine, I've only listened to one or two of these, and it's the only running podcast coming out of Duluth that I know, so...
Yeah, I know, exactly. You are number 32 now, so we've had quite a few. And I know awesome. That there's going to be some guests on there that you'll want to hear from for sure. There's a lot of fascinating stories out there, and you're going to just be added to it now, so it's pretty excited. Let's start with kind of your typical start question. When did you get started? How did you get started with running?
I got started, so I grew up just south of Superior, Lake Nebagman, Wisconsin, went to Maple Northwestern High School, and the thing about going to that high school is that football is not just a tradition, it's a way of life. Actually, the current head football coach there was my roommate in college, Joven Kroll. It's just that everybody does. So I played football in middle school in the first couple of years of high school. And I was digging around somewhere recently and found an old program with like heights and weights listed. And my sophomore year, which was last year, I played football. I think I was on the roster at 5'10", 125 pounds, which does not a football player make. So I, and I,
you play
I have to say,
wider.
Yeah, wide receiver, cornerback, and poorly at both of them. But the cross-country coach out there, John Woodbury at the time, he was a guy with a really long and storied history that had been bugging me to join the cross-country and track team since I was in middle school doing the one-mile run and gym class or things like that. And eventually it got through to me that I wasn't going anywhere with football and that running was a lot more fun. And that was when I switched over from being on the football team to being on the cross country team and running track. And at the same time, there was another guy, Paul Koski, who switched over as well. And single-handedly, we started to turn the program around. The first year that, Not that there wasn't a good cross-country program, but the first year that he and I joined, the team went from being fifth in the conference to first in the conference. In the second year, our senior year, we actually qualified for state in Wisconsin as a team. And that was one of those early highlights and early things that really kind of dug the – got me hooked on it. And – John Woodbury Woody, as he's known, he did a lot of things to really encourage you to run, just make it fun. Like we would do these things called mystery runs where we'd get on a bus. We'd lay down on the bus, drive around for 20 minutes. Say, okay, the high school is in that direction. Get back there. And we would go cross country, down trails, cross farmers fields, all that kind of stuff. And then we did a lot of running out there on trails too, after hours ski trail and the North Country Trail. And so it was the kind of the any surfaces thing that he got me hooked on there. And from there, I decided I wanted to keep going with it. I went to UW River Falls. Ray Christensen, the coach at UW Superior, tried like heck to recruit me to run at Superior, but both my parents worked there, and I wanted to get away from home, so I went to River Falls and carried on from there.
What were your distances in track? What did you do?
When I was in high school, it was definitely mile to mile. When I got to college, I started out as more like a 10K type, and backed off of that because I had a really disastrous race at Hamilton my freshman year. Hamlin, not Hamilton. And after that, I actually started running the steeplechase. That's most of what I did for outdoor track. And so it'd be like the 5K indoors and then steeplechase outdoors.
Cool.
And did you run cross country all through college then, Eric?
Yeah, technically a three-sport athlete, so cross country, indoor track, outdoor track, and it got me in touch with some really good friends that I've kept to today and kept me out of trouble. You know, I think that having something else to focus on helped with that transition to being independent in the college setting.
Right. And how was the transition from college after graduating high or college, you know, no more organized running, kind of like sounds like you were used to for what, many, many years. What was your mindset at that point?
At that point, I again, because the guys that I was with, I basically went right into marathon training. I took an extra year to graduate from college, so 2007 was my fifth year in college, and I ran the Twin Cities Marathon in the fall of 2007, and that was I did some kind of halfway training for it with some of those guys, and we were way overconfident on how easy the marathon was going to be. So I maintained for a couple of years kind of that consistency with it. Moved down to Rochester after I graduated from college, and I helped out with coaching the Rochester Century High School cross country team. So that kept me around it for a little while as well there. And then I don't know. It's just always been a passion, and it's something that I couldn't get away from. Once I started training for marathons, I was doing 2 to 3 of those or more a year, and that kept me motivated enough.
I think it's interesting that you talk about staying around the sport, especially with helping out at down at Century. I think that's very important. You hear so many times, kind of people who did run in college really kind of getting burned out, especially with the 3 seasons. If you're doing all three, that's a lot. It's pretty intense, and a lot of folks post college are like, "I'm done with this sport," or at least for a little while, is they're thinking, I think. But it's hard. You don't see as many people just kind of keep on rolling with it and sticking around with the sport. I think really probably helped, and definitely, kudos to you for that.
Yeah, did you have any kind of burnout feelings or I mean, that's a long time to be in competitive, you know, running 3 seasons like Tony mentioned. Yeah, what kept you in? What kept you in?
What I would say is that running for me is more of a lifestyle. Like it's just something that's inherent, and I want to be active as much as possible. And the other thing that I have to be completely honest, when I was in high school, we were super low mileage. Woody made it really clear that he just wanted to have people engage with running, have it be fun. I probably never did more than 30, 35 miles a week when I was in
Wow.
high school. When I got to college, it was kind of the same thing. The team at River Falls was, we were competitive for the very last spot in the WEAC, which was a really good conference, but we were not setting any speed records. And a lot of guys would take summers off and things like that. So mileage was still where I knew the high level programs guys were doing 90, 100 or more miles a week. We were more like the 55 to 70 range. And I think that kind of that lower mileage through most of that time made that transition a lot easier. If I'd been running, 110 miles a week through college, I think I would have had a very different experience trying to transition away.
Yeah, I think that's a good, very good point too. I think you're dead on with that for sure. Let's talk about back to kind of when you did get started, and something that we like to bring up on this podcast, and almost how this one reason why the podcast got started in the first place was kind of to pay tribute to some of our mentors who got us going. Eric, who are some of the people who mentored you and really inspired you?
I think John Woodbury, who I've already mentioned, he was just such an advocate for running, making it fun, and the lifestyle, the family atmosphere. I mean, coming from football when I joined the team, it was just kind of night and day. Football, they gear you up to bang heads with everybody, even in practice. Even if some of that's an act, it's very much a super competitive environment. And I think that what I found in cross country and track was a supportive family environment, at least within the team. And I mean, I even got to know guys from other schools in high school that I stayed in touch with. Same thing in college. You know, you go like heck to try and beat somebody in a race, but then once it's done, you take the cool down lap with them and just talk about what's going on. So I think that was some really, that's been part of what has helped me go on. And I've had the fortune of interacting with some people who are running at a really high level along the way. Even though River Falls wasn't extremely competitive school, at least in the context of the schools we usually ran against, being that close to the Twin Cities Metro, there were just really good runners that I came across paths with as they went through the area. There's a few that I think of, and I'd point to these as somewhat mentors. Going into my senior year of college, there were three guys who actually graduated from high school together in Hudson, Wisconsin. Ryan Meissen, Mike Renault, and Jason Finch. And all those guys at the time were training to make the marathon trials for the Olympics. Ryan had been there before. Jason, I think he wound up being like within a minute of the time qualifier five or six times. He never quite got over that hurdle.
No.
Ryan actually, Ryan won Grandma's half marathon back in the day, and Mike wound up running for Hanson's Brooks, and he was like a 2:13 guy later on. And they would go and do these 10-mile runs on Mondays at Willow River State Park in Hudson. And however it was that I got connected with them, I would go join them and just hang on for dear life on their easy day. Because, you know, they'd go cruise around this loop and they'd be talking and I'd be struggling just to make it up some of the hills there. So I think that those guys inspired me to just continue chasing it, seeing what it was like to really put everything into it in a way that I hadn't seen done before. And I think the next time that I... Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no. No, I was just... yeah, gotcha.
I think beyond that, when I think of mentors, was really connecting with the folks when I moved to Duluth in 2011. And that is that I fell in with a pretty rough crowd. I think about the... I moved here September 2011, and by the spring of the next year, I was running with a bunch of people on the ultra scene. And I remember from that year doing these long runs over the winter. You know, it was a really mild winter that year, so we ran the whole way through, and there'd be these groups that were like Greg Robertson, Dave Schuneman, Dave Hypenen, Chris Rubish. Tony was on quite a few of those, and seeing a lot of those guys having had success in the ultra distance got me inspired to go in that direction, along with meeting Craig Hertz at the same time through the Northern Minnesota Track Club races. And I kind of feel like that was that group is really what has fueled me over the past 10 years or so.
Yeah, I remember those days meeting at Leicester. We ran at Leicester quite a bit. And I remember one day, I don't know exactly what year it was, but there was a big group of us in. At the end, it was just you and I, Eric, and I think I did something like maybe 25 miles that day, and you did something like 30 or something that day on just some normal Saturday. I remember that back in the day. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was an awesome intersection of time in my life when I was working part-time and I didn't have any other real responsibilities. So I could just run as much as I want, and I got to chase running in a way that I hope everyone gets the opportunity for a little while, at least if they're interested in running, to kind of chase the goals that way, because there was no excuse for me not to get out. And I did crazy things like that, where I'd run for 30 miles in a day and then go home and just crash on the couch.
Right. Well, that kind of creates an interesting transition to, you know, the lifestyle of all that freedom of time to where you are now. Talk about that switch, and got two young kids at home now, and how has that changed?
First off, it's really good. I am so grateful for the opportunity to be a parent and be interacting with them. That said, there's no question that I can't begin to touch. I have training logs going back to December of 2004. I can tell you every workout, run, bike, ski that I've done going back that far. And every once in a while, I'll pull one of those old ones out from, you know, when I was in college or those first few years running ultras. And I can't imagine doing that because it was so much time. I don't know who it is, but I've heard a lot of talk about looking at stress very differently. That if you're someone who running is your only stress, you can put a lot more effort into it. As a parent, where I have stress related to the family, I have to kind of consider that under the training load. So I've definitely been much lower mileage. I would say like a good week for me now is 60 or 70. 10 years ago, it would have been closer to 100, if not over. And I'm pretty happy with that. I've almost always got one day off a week that I'm dedicating to cross training, to doing a little more strength work, because like so many people, I've been negligent on that. And know that everything that I hear tells me that it will prolong my career and success. So that's what I have to get into. And I'm fortunate that I've still got a group of people in town that do runs at kind of odd hours. There are groups that meet at 6 o'clock in the morning on Fridays and things like that. And that works out a little better with the parenting schedule too. So again, have to be grateful for the community there.
And how old are your kids? Tell us how old those guys are.
Yes. Firstborn, my daughter Ida, is turned 4 just this past October. And it's been really fun because we've been able to get her into some activities. She's doing, when they were happening before the pandemic, the Grandma's Marathon Young Athletes Foundation races. And she really got into those. Turns out chocolate milk and potato chips are a pretty big incentive. And we've been skiing a lot recently this winter, and it's been fun to start to share that with her. And then my son was born at the end of December here, so he's just turned, I think, 3 weeks old. And that's very much adjustment period still. Yeah, sleep is inconsistent. I was telling Mike earlier, one of the things that I've been fortunate for is that we got bought a Nordic Track studio cycle that we've got set up downstairs, so I can hop on there for a half hour or 45 minutes and watch him while he's taking a nap, or Ida while she's checking out some kid's TV show and sneak in a workout that way.
Nice. Making the most of what time that you have is a good way to do it.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of examples of that. I think of a guy who has some ties back to the Duluth scene, Kyle Pitari, who has had some real good success with ultras like Leadville and Western States. He's an attorney in Denver and a father of 3, and he's still running crazy well at all these ultras. And I've seen him post pictures of himself on a Nordic track with the incline set as steep as it can be. One kid on his back in a backpack, another kid on his front in a carrier, and the other one sleeping off to the side. Yeah. So you make do with what you can.
Yeah. Eric, what are some of your tricks that you've maybe picked up over the last 4 years with a young child to keep, you know, a routine, or just, you know, a level of mileage that you like, or What's worked for you personally?
I think what I'll say is, first off, it was a transition in mindset. Like I had the mindset before of, I got to get out for the run. I want to be really structured. And that just doesn't always work. When you're at the whim of someone else's schedule, you have to be creative. You have to be flexible. And so adjusting to that shift in mileage. And then I would say the biggest thing that I've done is I've really tried to target some specific workouts and put the effort into being successful with those. Let me give you an example. We got Ida started camping that first year of her life. We were going up the North Shore to different state parks. And what I'd actually do so that I could be available during the day, there were a couple of times where I wanted to get a long run in. We'd be camping at, Judge Magni State Park, and I'd get up at 3 a.m., go on the Superior Hiking Trail with my headlamp, spend about 3-4 hours running, get the long run in, get back, and then try and help out through the day so that I wasn't leaving my wife out there hanging. And Kendra, to her credit, has been very supportive of me continuing to run too. So I think having a partner that sees the value in that has made it easier too. She's an athlete herself, and understanding that mindset helps. But just kind of picking and choosing things, and people like Chris Rubish, who's one of my closest friends, training partners here, he's a nurse and works rotating schedules, has off days. So there are times where we've done long runs during the middle of the week and things like that just to fit it in. So I think that finding that flexibility and that comfort with not knowing, I might have a training plan outlined, but swapping days around happens all the time. And that's got to be okay.
What about your, goals? I mean, you said, Eric, that your kind of training mindset and expectations maybe have shifted, in fatherhood. What about your goals in terms of, have your races been altered? Are you cutting back? Is it kind of just the same and you have different expectations? How has your race or your goal layout changed?
That's a good question. And that's something that ties into, I'm going to deviate just slightly, but that is to say, I've dealt with a couple of kind of significant issues or injuries over the last 7-8 years. I had an ankle issue that slowed me down for a number of years. I took the year 2014 entirely off. And then a couple of years ago, playing pickup basketball, I broke a bone in my right foot. Don't play pickup basketball if you're a runner. Ball sports are not our friend. through those, I just can't train at the same level that I did before. And what that's meant is I would say that my goals haven't shifted significantly, but I'm having to still searching for the training plan and training level that will allow me to achieve them. I'd like to still, I do not think my best days are behind me. I think especially with the ultra distances and the 100-mile distance, my best days are ahead. And I've just got to kind of dial things in terms of what works for getting me to that place. So I am definitely racing less, but my hope is to hone in on what can still bring me success. When you get into those longer races, part of the draw to them is just that you don't know what's going to happen on a given day, that you have to have that same kind of flexibility, because even if you're having the race of your life, you might turn your ankle, you might have something happen that completely shifts what the paradigm is for that race, and right. Understanding how to be flexible during that time is so important. So I guess what I'd say this year, especially, I'm hoping to do 200-mile races, High Lonesome 100, which is out in Colorado at the end of July, and then coming back for Superior 100 about 6 weeks later on the North Shore. And I still think I have a good Superior 100-mile race in me. Having seen people like Mike go 22 hours and change. I think that a sub 24 hour time is within my wheelhouse if I can put it together. High Lonesome, because it's at elevation, is going to be a finish first, and beyond that we'll see. But you know, I think that seeing what I can achieve at that longer distance is something that is really a draw for me right now.
So the trails and the ultra world still kind of, they're kind of holding your interest more than the road scene and maybe even the marathons themselves too.
I think so. What I've found, I think in this transition to the running that I'm doing now, it's easier for me to get out for a long run than it is for me to go down to a track and run some 400s or mile repeats or something like that. You know, I look back on the workouts I did in college of like 2400s at 70 to 72 or something, and I can't begin to fathom trying to take that on right now. But I know that I could go out the door right now and get through 4 hours of running, and that's what's going to help me for the 100-mile distance.
Yeah, it's if you wanted to make a big shift of gears, you need years to make that gear shift. You can't just do that in one season. Yeah, for sure.
I think one of the most interesting phenomenons, whatever, with runners is kind of that transition to different types of races. You know, it's so weird. It's so funny to see just sometimes how people get into one race or another. And so, Eric, I want to ask you two transitions. One from, you know, college track and cross country to that marathon. And I guess first, had you run any other races, a lot of other races or any other marathons before that post-collegiate one?
No, the first one was that 2007 Twin Cities Marathon. And it was kind of the story of how a lot of my races have gone since. It was a really hot day that year. It was the year they actually stopped Chicago. And I went through the half marathon basically right on 3 hour pace where I hoped to be, and blew up spectacularly in the second half. I remember just crawling up Summit Avenue. And like at one point, it felt like the lowest of the low. There's a group of St. Thomas students out there. And I went from just walking to this shuffle again, and they all broke out cheering. And I thought, oh man, this is the lowest of the low right now that I'm being cheered just for. And not that you shouldn't be, but it was like that, coming from the competitive collegiate athlete mindset, that was hard to swallow. What happened is, go ahead, Mike.
You should go first, but I'm curious what the conversation was to get you into that race. Was it just like, hey, let's do a marathon? Okay. Or, I mean, yeah, keep going with your story, though.
Yeah, it was pretty much just that. And what I'd say, what grew from that, stubborn about running, and that is if I don't find success, rather than backing off or looking for something else, I come back again. And that's what it was like with the marathon. So I did that first one. If I had a perfect day there, it'd be interesting to know how my career looks from there on, because I don't know that I'd have the same kind of motivation. At the time, the big desire was a Boston qualifier. Like that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go run Boston after I'd graduated. And it took me a few years, but I did get there. I actually qualified at a race called Rails to Trails that's on the Elroy Sparta Trail near Norwalk, Wisconsin. And I had, in between that first marathon and that marathon, I think it was 7 or 8 times that I'd had various degrees of go out well and blow up. So I just kind of kept hammering at it until I finally broke through. And then when I found some success, it was the okay, now I can do well at this, time to keep doing it.
And how was the transition to ultra marathons? What led you to that kind of style of racing and that distance?
I can tell you specifically, Northern Minnesota Track Club, NMTC, September, October 2011, there was a race at Snowflake. 7K race, I think. And after the race, talking about the community, I went for a cool down with a group of guys. I know Chris Rubish was there, Craig Hertz, who I've mentioned, Eric Atkinson, probably a few others. And it was the first time I'd started to open the conversation with some of these guys. And I think Craig and Chris said, yeah, we're getting into this ultra stuff. We really like just going up for these 4 or 5 hour trail runs. And well, that sounds like fun. There you go.
That's all you need. You're a member of the club, just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah. What I'll say too, though, something else that pulls into this. I always had kind of the distance mindset. I think I always knew I wanted to do really long events because growing up, actually, my dad was a skier and he would go do the Birkebeiner down in Hayward. And that was actually the first passion that I had for an event. I remember watching the results of that every year, seeing these, knowing the names of guys coming over from Sweden and Norway and other places in Europe that were winning those events. And I knew that I was going to ski that. And it makes sense that I would also get interested in running like that too. I did my first Birkebeiner in 2000 at age 16, and had a really, really rough experience, but because it snowed about 6 inches overnight the day before the race, and it was a very slow year, but like everything else, it didn't go well, so I had to come back and do it again.
And you have a streak going, don't you? A Berkey streak?
I've pretty close. I've missed a couple of years. So my senior year of college, I missed the Coeur d'Alope because of I was running a 5K in St. Olaf that day. And then the year that I broke my foot a couple of years back here, I missed it. But
yeah,
I've done an event at the American Birkebeiner every year since 1990. I did the Barna Berkey the first time around. I did the Coeur d'Alope as soon as I was old enough for that. And this year will be Berkey number 14.
Nice. That's pretty awesome. You're going to have one of those, what is it, like a gold bib? They have like a gold bib for people?
Yeah, if you hit 20 years, you enter the Birch Leggings Club. They give you a purple bib. And if
purple
you get to
bib.
50 years, yep, 30 years, you get the gold bib. And
wow.
They call them Uber leggers. And just by way of background, my dad is going for number 26 this year, I think. I've got an uncle who's done, I think, just over 30, or he's about at 30. And then my uncle's brother-in-law has done like 35 of them. So there's a lot of family connection to it.
Well, you're not even going to be a big deal in the family then.
No. Well, and when it comes to claim to fame, my dad and his family grew up near Hayward, and they would go to Telemark Resort, which is heavily connected with the Berkey history. And my uncle Dan and my grandmother were actually at Telemark when the first Birkebeiner was finishing.
Wow. That's so cool.
It's a long life, though. You got 35 more in you, Eric.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Eric, you've always struck me as like kind of like the quintessential endurance sport, silent sport kind of guy. And I don't know how much, you know, maybe kind of paddling, kayaking, canoeing you get into. I know you go to the Boundary Waters quite a bit. Is that kind of stuff that you do that the water sport stuff a lot too?
Yeah, definitely. I think that silent sports, just in general, that's something that is a family tradition as well. My grandfather and my grandmother, their business for most of their life was building canoes in Couderay, Wisconsin, canoes and sailboats. And so my dad was doing these long canoe trips when he was a kid, got us into that, and we've done I've done the backpacking all the way along. Like you said, the Boundary Waters, I've been up there every year since I think 1989, save for one or two. It's something that is really motivating to me. And I think as we're in the context of Duluth, we're fortunate to have some a really strong community around that. I don't think that there are many people who are just one thing. I think
Right.
there are a lot of people who are runners, who are skiers, who are bikers, who camp, who do all this other stuff. And again, I got that influence real early on. I remember in middle school years, checking out books written by the Duluth News Tribune writer Sam Cook about the things that he was doing with his family and kind of the outdoor lifestyle. And that really, really spoke to me and connected to me. And then, years later, the connection that we share, working with his son at Duluth Running Company, well, both of you guys were there too, and meeting Sam there is
Yeah.
really interesting circles that came around.
Yeah, there's when you get to occasionally in Duluth meet somebody who you kind of know as this or that, you get to meet with them and you just kind of have an instant familiarity with them and a comfort with them, and it's pretty cool. Sam Cook being an example of that, but there are others as well. I love that part of Duluth. Eric, I know that you do a ton of writing as well. I know that you've been kind of getting involved in like some poetry and that kind of stuff. Talk about your writing that you've been focusing on here in the last I don't know, handful of years, but I know you've been doing it longer than I've known you even.
Yeah, that's one of those things that came from my mom was a librarian, and so we were always reading when I was a kid, and it just grew from there. I always had I would say a passion for absorbing knowledge, and that came easily through reading, and that transitioned to writing. And I went through college as an English major, and I thought I would go on to teach at the middle school or high school level. The world and life had other plans, but I've been able to reconnect in about the past 5, 6 years within Duluth, especially. There's a strong group of writers. I mentioned Sam Cook. There are many others. There's a writer in Superior named Barton Sutter, who's a poet that's focused on, does a lot of the work around outdoor activities. Same with one of my high school teachers, Jerry Wilbur, has written a couple of books that are focused on the outdoors too. So it's that crossover of lifestyles that appeals to me. And I got connected. I just started writing some poetry and saw that during the Homegrown Music Festival, there was this poetry showcase where you could
Yeah.
up there. There wasn't any qualifier other than you have to be a poet, and they'd give you 3 minutes at the podium. And so I showed up, and it went pretty well from there. I really felt fortunate to kind of find my voice within that. And a lot of what I'm doing is, I would say, probably 90% of what I've written in terms of poetry has started during a run. And it might
Yeah.
be something as basic as like image that something that I come across, and then I'll start writing a line. And then when I get home, that line will lead into many more. And it's really fun to see those things incorporated. And also, I think, just tell the story in a little different way. There's a lot that's been written about running. There's some good stuff that's been written about running. There's some bad stuff that's been written about running. And I feel like poetry for me is a way to say something that's a little different, because it can be shorter, it can be more concise, and it can speak to that imagery rather than maybe trying to tell an entire story.
Yeah, I agree. I think the musicality of both poetry and running, with just the consistent rhythm of your footsteps and your breathing, you can kind of get just locked into that rhythm, lends itself well to writing, and specifically writing poetry. I think there's a nice kind of combination of that sort of physical and spiritual at times.
Eric, have you noticed that you've been able to kind of draw, your skill, I guess, in writing poetry and knowledge of poetry, and kind of been able to harness that in when going gets tough on a really long run or a really long race?
That's a really good question, and I've never thought about connecting those two that way. I would say that I've thought about running in reflection, but maybe not in the moment of doing it quite that way. What I'll say is most of the things that come to me like that, it's not during a race. I've never had a race where I've had that ability to check out and kind of appreciate the time. I've been too focused on what's happening, but I think that it's kind of a mindset, and it's being able to dissociate from running and go into those other places with writing and kind of observing what's going on. I think that's probably the transition that I would make between the running and writing.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mention it because I remember reading about the great ultramarathoner Yannis Koros, and he apparently wrote all types of like traditional Greek music. And they say, Yannis Koros, how can you run for 4 days straight? And I mean, just had so many crazy accomplishments in the ultra running world, and he would say that he would just write the write music in his head while he's running for 4 days straight, so I don't know. Anyways,
No, that's really cool. And now I'm gonna be Googling Janos Koros music after we're done here.
have to send that off. Yeah. Well, Eric, I always love to ask if what your favorite race type or race distance. I mean, if you could do one, distance or type of race, maybe for the rest of your days, what would it be? Also, what's your favorite race itself? The race name and any I'd love to hear if you have a good racing story, funny or brutal, or I don't know, any notable racing story that sticks out in your mind.
I'll call back to a couple of things here. I think of we're familiar with being in the zone, right? That experience of when you're running, something clicks and running does not feel like work anymore. You feel absolutely invincible. And there are a handful of races that I can think of where that's occurred, and those are the ones that kind of keep me coming back. That if I can capture that feeling even for a minute, it's a euphoria that's like nothing else. The first time that I really remember experiencing that was during a 1500 meter race when I was in college. And to give you some context of what kind of a runner I was, this was, I think, my sophomore year, and I had never broken 5 minutes for the mile. And I was doing a race at Stout. And I went through the first, would be about the first 900 meters of the race, having a pretty decent race. And then with 3 laps to go, something happened that I think I ran, somewhere under 1:40 for those last 3 laps. It was way faster than I should have been able to close. And I wound up running 4:23 for the 1500, which converts to mid 4:40s mile, and it was this huge breakthrough. And there was one of my college roommates that had, pretty good lead on me coming into even the last lap, and I got him at the line because I was moving so well at the end of that race. And then after that, I think of the last couple of miles of that Rails to Trails marathon I mentioned earlier. When I got to the last 2 miles, and I've been trying for so long to get the Boston qualifier, And the last 2 miles, I had to run like 17 minutes or so to hit the Boston time. And the way I was feeling, I knew I was there. And I remember tears flowing for most of those last 2 miles just because it was finally this breakthrough of something that I'd been through a bunch of races to try and get to.
Cool.
And so to segue into the start of that question, I think that kind of technical single track trail races are by far the most interesting thing to me. If I had to pick a distance, I'd flip a coin between 50 and 100 miles. 100 because you get into so many different things and you get so much, there's a different challenge to it. 50 because it's something that you're guaranteed to be done and within the same day, and you can actually approach it as more of a race than what you can for the 100, I think. And when I started running the single track trail stuff, that after I'd moved to Duluth, there's two other races that I'll mention as absolute highlights. One of them is the first ultra I ever ran, Chippewa 50K in 2012. And that was after the training runs that we'd mentioned earlier during with the big group. Tony and I had done that really long run. And I got into Chippewa, and it's an out and back, and I hit the turnaround in about 10th place or something like that. And there was a really quality field of guys that were there. Guys ahead of me like Chris Rubish, John Storkamp, Jake Hagee. There's a guy from the Twin Cities named Aaron Drevlo, the winner of the race, Rasmus Hoag. Dusty Olson of Yore was in the mix there as well. And after the turnaround during that race, I came through the turnaround in 1:56 and change. And the guys, in 8th place, the other guys were probably 5 minutes clear of me. And coming back, I just started hammering with about, I think I hit about mile 20, and something just felt really, really good. And I'd been with a group, and I pulled away from them. And I dug and I dug and I dug, and I didn't make up any ground until I think about mile 26. And between mile 26 and mile 28, I went from being in, I think, 8th place to being in 2nd place, as all those other guys were just coming back to me. And I hit the last aid station and asked how far the leader was ahead of me. And it was about 3 miles to go. And it would have taken a really spectacular last 3 miles to make it up. If the race had been another 4 or 5 miles longer, I'm pretty sure I would have caught him. But that day, four of us broke the previous course record, went under 4 hours, and everything just came together. It was an unbelievable success for being my first ultra. And I mean, that's one of those things that I got the taste of it, and I had to keep coming back. And then the final highlight that I'd hit, in addition, I mean, I could go all night telling you race stories, but 2012 season, I ran a couple of 50-mile races, decided I wanted to get into the hundreds, and I applied for the Western States 100 lottery for the next year. And I'm one of the luckiest darn people in the world because with one ticket in that lottery, I got into the race. Literally, I have to tell everyone forever that I won the lottery because it's the truth. And I went out there 2013, and I put a lot of effort. That was the time when I still had free time, and I put a lot of effort into training, and I thought I was going to have a really good day. And it wound up being the second hottest day in course history. At the start of the race, it was 74 degrees at 5 a.m. At the official recorded high at the finish line in Auburn was 102, and in the canyons, which are hotter, I heard reports that it was up to like 117 or something like that. And so I actually managed the race pretty well for the first 30, 40 miles. I really kept it under control. And then the heat got to me, and I got low on calories, and I bonked, and I got to Michigan Bluff, and I rallied and got to Forest Hill, and I picked up Craig Hurts as a pacer there. and started running down Canal Street. And when we started running there, I just got too excited about finally being with the pacer, ran too hard, and my stomach went south almost immediately. And I started puking everywhere. There's actually one of those aid stations along Canal Street. I bumped into another guy from the Duluth running scene. Eric Escher was working at an aid station there. And at 3 a.m., I'm hands on knees, puking the last gulps of Coke that I had out. And he's saying, "Hey, how's it going?" And I was thinking, well, I think I would hope you could tell. And so I went from Forest Hill. Honestly, during that race, after Forest Hill, I ate about four or five saltines and some Coke, and that's all that I kept down for the last 38 miles of the race.
Wow.
I came into Green Gate. I was slurring. My wife said I sounded like I was drunk at the aid station there. I asked to lay down, and this is where I swapped pacers from Craig Hurst to Chris Rubish. And Chris told me one of the greatest ultra lies, because I didn't find out about it until 4 or 5 years later. I went to lay down. I changed my socks and my shoes, and I said, "Just let me rest." And I honestly thought I was down for like 20, 30 minutes. And apparently what Chris did while I was laying down there was huddled everyone up, the crew and my that was there, and said, "Hey, we're going to get him up in 5 minutes and go." And he did. And it was, I didn't hear that part of it. I kept on thinking that I'd been out for a half hour until he told me that a number of years later. And from there, we started walking and we started running. And I don't know what switch flipped, but something changed. And the last 20 miles of that race, I started charging. And I've gone too long without mentioning my parents, because they've been just giant supporters of everything that I've done. They've been at literally almost all of my races ever, definitely the ones that they can be. And they were at Western States. And at Devil's Thumb earlier in the race, I'd eaten a popsicle and I got it in my head as I was at Green Gate suffering that, you know, a popsicle would be really good. So as I took off from there, trudging away with Chris, my dad went off on this journey to, I think, a CVS that was open all night in Auburn, and he bought a little cooler and a pack of popsicles and was trying to bring them back to Highway 93, or Highway 49, the aid station there. And I rallied so well at that point that he actually missed me while he was making the popsicle run, and he didn't get to see me again until the finish, because I came into that point and the switch had turned. I was chasing. In the last 15 miles of that race, I went, I think I caught about 25 people. There was, when you look at the splits, there was someone that at mile 85 was an hour ahead of me that I caught in the last mile before the finish line. And coming in the last mile off of Roby Point, you can have as many people run with you as you want. And my wife was there, my brother was there, a few other people, and I actually dropped some of them because I was in absolute get-home mode and just cranking down the road. And to have that race go from the excitement of being there to the heat to the struggle to the absolute low and then the highest high was just an incredible experience. And that was, you know, one of those that was my first 100-mile race, too, and enough things went right and enough things went wrong that made me want to keep coming back.
Wow. That's quite the first 100.
Yeah, I'd done everything that I could to talk to people I knew, like Tony, who had already been through the 100-mile distance, and other people in the area, and I think that there's nothing that you can learn before running it that will tell you what it's like. You just got to find out.
Yeah.
Right. I'd be curious to see what your fastest and slowest mile splits were from that race.
I mean, I think I legit in that race was running like 7-minute pace in the last couple of miles. And I know that there were some miles that had been like 25 plus minutes while I was crawling along in the middle of the night.
Wow.
That's wild.
And above all else, you know, the 100, if you ask me to pick a specific race that I love the most, it's got to be Superior 100. It's right here in our backyard. It's on an incredible trail. It's point to point. There's an incredible community around it. And I think it's just such a compelling course. It draws me back year after year after year. And I hope that I get to share that trail with you again soon too, Mike.
Mm-hmm. I hope so too. And you said earlier, Eric, the best is yet to come. And if I'm correct, you had your fastest Superior time was the last time you ran it. Is that right?
Not the last time. I was a couple of hours off. It was a few years before that. But the last Superior that I did was would have been about 8 months after I broke my right foot. So I was just happy to be there running that one. I was so grateful just to be able to participate in that race.
Yeah. Keep your fingers crossed for 2021, huh?
I'm hopeful. I've seen that John Storkamp and Rockstead are running. They're going to wait to open it, but I'm really optimistic that by September we'll be able to have some kind of event up there.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think so. I think something like that will happen. Well, Eric, I have one more question. This is not running or even remotely silent sport related, but you're a Wisconsin guy, and I got to know, what are your thoughts? Are the Packers going to win the Super Bowl or not?
I think they're going to go. I don't know if they'll win. I'd like to say yes, but I haven't tracked the NFL that closely this year. I watched most of the game yesterday, and
yeah.
If they play like that, I think anyone in the NFL is going to have a hard time beating them. It's fun to see, and you know there's some kind of symmetry to it, right? Because I think I'm about the same age as Aaron Rodgers, who's looking pretty grizzled these days, but again had his best year in quite a long time this year. So hopefully
exactly.
That bodes well.
Yeah, there's a parallel there.
I think this podcast inadvertently started and ended with football.
Yeah, I hadn't
definitely
even thought about that.
Definitely a first for the Duluth Rundown. All right. Well, Eric, thanks so much for joining us. Anything else you want to share?
One thing that I haven't talked about, and I'm going to keep this plug short, but I see a really strong, I think one of the things that draws me to ultra running and trail running, I've mentioned the community, but there's the idea of service within that group, because ultra runners, they don't just go run races. They go and they volunteer at races. They maintain trails. They support other people at races and crew. And that idea of service tied to running and tied to that passion is something that I think is inspirational to see. You know, people who aren't runners themselves that have been manning the same aid station on the Superior course for 20 plus years or whatever it is. It's just unbelievable the number of good people that there are within this community that you meet both doing the races and just when you're out running on the trails. And I just want to acknowledge that that's a huge part of what goes on too. And shout out to organizations like the Superior Hiking Trail Organization, Upper Midwest Trail Runners, the Ice Age Trail Alliance, the North Country Trail, that have created these places that we're fortunate to be able to go run.
Yeah, I agree. Well said. I think that's something specific even just to John Storkamp's races in general, is that sense of community and family. There's many great aspects about his races, but I think that's the number one aspect, is that community thing that he's created there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's something else, and we're so fortunate to have it here.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Eric. We'll hope to see you out there, maybe on the lake walk again, like we bumped into each other about a few weeks ago. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, with how icy things are around here, I think I'll be if I'm outside spending a lot of time on the lake walk. So hope to see you there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that wraps up episode number 32 of TDR. I want to thank our guest, Eric Nordgren, for joining us today. It's really cool to talk to Eric. It's been a long time since I've had a conversation with him. I want to thank all of our listeners, you guys, and keeping us going. So thank you again. Thanks to our sponsor, Austin Jarrow, for helping us keep this thing going as well. And Mike, thanks to you for mixing all this stuff and doing the edits at the end and putting it up on the page.
Yeah, of course. Thanks to you for doing the intro and the outro every week. Boom.
Boom. All right, everybody. Well, we'll see you out there in the Duluth area.
Thanks, everyone.